Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktavinda. We are reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 20, verse 248. Before we start, Prabhu, would you like a chair? You prefer to stand. Okay. Yeah, fine. Just thought you might be more comfortable in a chair. Gauri Prabhu, welcome. Come in, please. Washroom. Betty. Okay, so here we go. You're just in time to join us in chanting the verse. Ananta avatara Krishna nahika ganan. Ananta avatar Krishna nahika ganan. Sakka chanda nyaya kari dik darashan. Sakka chanda nyaya kari dik darashan. Ananta avatar Krishna nahika gana. Sakka chanda nyaya kari dik darashan. Right, so what does all this mean? Ananta, unlimited. Avatara, incarnations, Krishna, of Lord Krishna, Nahika Ganana, there is no possibility of counting. Sakka Chandra Nyaya, by the analogy of the moon, and the branches of a tree. Kari, I make. Dik darashana, a slight indication. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, there are innumerable incarnations of Krishna, and there is no possibility of counting them. We can simply indicate them by giving the example of the moon and the branches of a tree. Shall we repeat that? There are innumerable incarnations of Krishna. And there is no possibility of counting them. We can simply indicate them by giving the example of the moon and the branches of a tree. Purport. Although the moon appears to be located in the branches of a tree, it is actually situated very far away. Similarly, none of the avatars or incarnations of Lord Krishna are within this material world. But they are visible by the causeless mercy of the Lord. We should not consider them to belong to this material world, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, avajanantimam udha manushing tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. Avatars descend of their own free will. And although they may act like ordinary human beings, they do not belong to this material world. Lord Krishna and his avatars can be understood only by the grace of the Lord. And then there's a quote from Katha Upanishad without translation, and then there's a quote from Bhagavatam also without translation. I believe translations were originally there, but in this edition they slipped out. Anyway, Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo na medhaya na bahuna shrutena yame vaisha vrinute tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vivrinute tanum song. Anyone have an idea what that means? Oh, it's written in your version. Yeah, it's in the folio. It's not in this printed version. Can you read it out from... Thank you. And another verse. Atapite deva padambu jadvaya prasadale shanugrihita evahi janati tatvang bhagavan mahimno nachanya eko pichiram vichinvan. From Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Verse 29. Translation. Ananta avatara Krishna nahika ganan shakha chandra nyaya karidik darashan. There are innumerable incarnations of Krishna, and there is no possibility of counting them. We can simply indicate them by giving the example of the moon and the branches of a tree. So I would say the key word in this verse is ananta, unlimited. And I want to explore this a little bit in relation to the idea of mercy, actually power and mercy, and how these might be related, and how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu hints to us that these may be related. First, going back to last week's verse, I jumped actually a little bit. We read verse 244, about Sankarshan as the first personal expansion of the Lord, and others being incarnations, like the fish incarnation. Sankarshan is an expansion of the Purusha, or Vishnu, The incarnations such as Matsya, the fish incarnation, appear in different yugas for different pastimes. And then this is elaborated in the next couple of verses. There are six types of incarnations of Krishna. One is the incarnations of Vishnu, Purusha avatars. And another is the incarnations meant for the performance of pastimes, Lila avatars. There are incarnations that control the material qualities, Guna avatars. Incarnations of the Manus, Manvantara avatars. Incarnations in different millenniums, Yuga avatars. Shouldn't it be Tattvavipra? Shouldn't it be millennia? Millennia? Instead of millenniums. Really? And incarnations of empowered living entities, Shaktya, Vesha, Avatar. And then finally, before today's verse, childhood and boyhood are the typical ages of the deity. Krishna, the son of Maharaj Nanda, performed his pastimes as a child and as a boy. Now this verse, to me, comes in as a kind of non sequitur, kind of a surprise. But in any case, all of this passage, of course, Mahaprabhu is elaborating on the many, many forms of the Lord, and then in today's verse he's saying, actually, they're unlimited. There's no counting them. How can we count them? And then the example or the analogy, Shaka Chandra Nyaya, of moon and branches of a tree. You all know this example, I believe. You know this analogy. You want to call the attention of a child to see the moon at night, but the child's attention is going here and there, and you say, oh, look at the moon, and he or she just looks at your finger or looks somewhere else. So then you line the child up behind a tree so that the moon and the tree is between the moon and the child. And then you say, see between those branches? What do you see there? Oh, there's the moon. And the idea of the example is that by connecting to something which is proximate, you can have some understanding or some perception of something which is not proximate. And that's actually what analogies in general do. So actually this is an analogy about analogies. But in this context, it's analogy about what is the significance of giving us all these lists. Because after some time, you read a list of names of anything, including names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and after a while you might start feeling a little fatigued. Like, okay, so there are lots and lots and lots of avatars and forms, expansions of the Lord, so what? And then Krishnadas or Lord Chaitanya sort of makes it open-ended. He says, actually, the number of avatars is unlimited. Avatars and so on, forms of Krishna. You can't begin to count them. So what he's saying is we're giving, in a sense, a sampling. And the continuation of this passage is he's explaining how, because Pancharatra, which really all of this explanation is, it's all about how does the Lord, who is beyond the universe, get into the universe? What is the connection between the Supreme Lord who is inaccessible to the world where we are. In other words, how can we be connected with the Lord? And so in Pancharatra there's this kind of analysis by explaining these, how the Lord expands and descends. And it's interesting how the descent of the Lord is very intimately tied up with the creation of the world, because the Lord has to descend into somewhere, and that somewhere cannot be by the logic of Vedanta created by someone other than the Lord. And so you have this incredible, what occurred to me as a kind of elaborate choreography of divine dance. He is, first of all, preparing himself by, the Lord is expanding from Krishna to Narayana. And curiously, in this few lines, there's no mention, if I'm not mistaken, of Narayana, but then it will go into Vasudeva, Sankarshan Pradyumna Anirudha, and so on. Let's read a little of this continuation. O learned brahmanas, just as hundreds and thousands of small ponds issue from great reservoirs of water, innumerable incarnations flow from Shri Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the reservoir of all power. All right, this is a verse quoted from Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, toward the end of the list of avatars. Then, in a similar way, Sutta is telling his audience the number of avatars is countless. And he's giving another analogy. He's talking about rivers and lakes and rivulets. And his point is the same. How do you count the number of rivulets entering into the ocean? Ultimately, it's you give up at some point. Next verse, 250. In the beginning, Krishna incarnates himself as Purusha avatars, or Vishnu incarnations. These are of three types. Now, Prabhupada gives a one-sentence purport. Up to this verse, the many types of expansions have been described. Now, the manifestations of the Lord's different potencies will be described. So we've got expansions, sort of expanding out from Krishna, and now we're getting an explanation of energies, how the world manifests, and therefore how the Lord can manifest in the world. The next verse is from Sattvata Tantra. Here we go. Ekam tu mahata srastri dvitiyam tvanda sangstitam tritiyam sarvabhutastam tani nyatva vimuchate. Vishnu has three forms called Purushas. The first, Mahavishnu, is the creator of the total material energy, Mahat. The second is Garbhodakashayi, who is situated within each universe. And the third is Shirodakashayi, who lives in the heart of every living being. He who knows these three becomes liberated from the clutches of Maya. Yes. What means Shayi, by the way? There's a Karana Dakashayi, there's a Garbo Dakashayi, and there's a Chiro Dakashayi. So what's a Shayi? Yes, exactly. It's one who lies down. So our God is a lying down God. He does not have to work in order to create. He has a nice nap. And where does he lie down? In an udaka. He lies down in water. What kind of religion is this? It goes on. Krishna has unlimited potencies, out of which three are chief: willpower, the power of knowledge, and the creative energy. Now, this is very interesting for all of our managers. If you want something to happen, there has to be Icha Shakti, Jnana Shakti, and Kriya Shakti. Right? Right. So here now we get a little elaboration on this. The predominator of the willing potency is Lord Krishna, for by his supreme will, everything comes into existence. In willing, there is a need for knowledge, and that knowledge is expressed through Vasudeva. Okay, so we have Icha Shakti, and the pradhan, the foundation of Icha Shakti is who? Wrong. I'll read it again. You weren't listening. Krishna, the predominator of the willing potency is Lord Krishna. Why? Because by his supreme will, everything comes into existence. Okay? But then, in willing, there is a need for knowledge, and that knowledge is expressed through Vasudeva. Very good. There is no possibility of creation without thinking, feeling, willing, knowledge, and activity. The combination of the supreme will, knowledge, and action brings about the cosmic manifestation. Kriya Shakti Pradhan Sankarshan Balaram Prakrita Prakrita Srishti Karina Nirman. Lord Sankarshan is Lord Balaram. Being the predominator of the creative energy, he creates both the material and spiritual worlds. Okay, so who is the pradhan of the Kriya Shakti? Balaram, Sankarshan, the plower. Sankarshana means one who draws, one who pulls, drags. Karshana means dragging or pulling. So Sankarshana is the cosmic plower. He plows the cosmic field to create the world. Yeah. And Vasudev, what does Vasudev mean? Yeah, all-pervading is one sense. Vasu means one who dwells, and Deva, Lord, the Lord who dwells in everything and in whom everything dwells. It works both ways. So that's Vasudeva, then Sankarshan, then Krishna. We have these three as we can say agents of creation, of manifestation. And it will go on to say how Balaram is, of course, creating not only this world, he is creating the spiritual world, although the spiritual world needs no creation. Sisi Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. So I mentioned before the interesting question. One interesting question, it seems to me, is what is the relation between power? We're hearing about the Lord as being unlimitedly powerful. One way that he expresses his power is by expanding himself into so many different forms, and through these many forms, creating the world, creating the spiritual world, appearing in the world. So that's all about power. But power by itself, fortunately, is not the whole story of who is God. Fortunately, we have the counterpart of the Lord's power, and that is his mercy. And what all of this leads to for us, what is in it for us, is that this makes it very interesting for us. It makes it possible for us. It makes us feel safe to be the servants of the Lord. A living being likes to serve someone who is both powerful and compassionate. If you are serving someone who is only powerful, that can be very frightening, because the person who is very powerful one day might destroy you. One moment he's taking care of you, and the next moment, oh, I don't need you anymore. But the Lord is powerful and he is compassionate. And how he shows, this is what's being explained in all this elaborate description of forms of the Lord, is one way that he shows his compassion is by becoming accessible, appearing in the world. And he doesn't just do it once. He comes again, and he comes again, and he says, let's try it this way, let's try it that way. Let's get the conditioned soul through a fish incarnation. Well, that didn't work. Okay, let's try a turtle. No, they didn't get that one either. Okay, let's try, I know, let's try a little boy, Krishna. This will certainly work. And so the Lord appears as Krishna, a charming little boy who has fun all the time, even when trouble comes. When Krishna has trouble, what does he do? He has a good time. The demons come, he kills them. When he's called to Mathura to meet Kamsa, sort of a David and Goliath story. You know David and Goliath? Some of you don't know, I dare say. Uncultured. Anyway. All right, admit. Anyway, sort of a David and Goliath story, yes, in which the Lord shows his unlimited power but also his mercy in so many different ways all at once. We have this very nice verse in Canto 10, chapter 43, verse 17. Malanam ashanirninam naravarastrinam smaramurtiman gopanam svajano achatang shitibujang shastas apitro shishu mrityurbo japate virana vidushang tatvang param yoginam vrishninam paradevateti vidito rangangata sagraja. The various groups of people in the arena, the wrestling arena of Kamsa, regarded Krishna in different ways when he entered it with his older brother. The wrestlers saw Krishna as a lightning bolt, the men of Mathura as the best of males, the women as Cupid in person. The cowherd men as their relatives, the impious rulers as a chastiser, his parents as their child, the king of the Bojas as death, the unintelligent as the Supreme Lord's universal form, the yogis as the absolute truth, and the Vrishnis as their supreme worshipable deity. So the Lord, this appearing as Krishna, can appear to all different beings in different ways. That is power, but it is also compassion. Wonderful compassion of the Lord. Now the Lord appears in so many forms, and someone may accuse, this is polytheism. What would you say to that? Polytheism, yes or no? Are we polytheists?
No.
Are you sure? Look on the altar, how many gods we have there. Huh? You all seem to agree that we are polytheists except one. You're all saying no, but why are we not polytheists? Sorry? Krishna is supreme. Huh? Ishvara Parama Krishna? Sarva Karana Karanam? Okay, Krishna is the cause of all causes, so we're saying there is one Lord we worship who appears in so many forms. I think there's another point here, or a related point. There's still room here if you want. No. Okay. There's another point here. What is monotheism? It is having the attitude of worship of one God only. It's not only that there's only one God, but it's having the mood of being a devotee of one God only. Yes. And that is called Eka Bhakti. Eka Bhakti. Ekantika Bhakti, and the person who does it is Ekantika Bhakta. So that spirit of devotion to one Lord is possible with the understanding that the Lord is all-powerful and He is all-compassionate. Why? Because one is so, one feels completely safe in the shelter of that Lord. So, I want to request now a little bit your indulgence as I read something which is connected to this last point, namely Ekantika Bhakta. We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita elsewhere that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled south, and in the south one time, he met one devotee named Ramadas. And I was thinking about this episode, this pastime, and it led me to make a kind of meditation experiment, which then I wrote down. Just a few days ago, we had Ram Navami, and at the time I was in Montevideo in South America, and I decided, well, I couldn't eat anything that day. Let me chant, but let me also write something. This is part of a project some of us are doing. A few devotees are participating, and others of you are welcome to also participate in writing reflections on the Lord's different pastimes, specifically Rama's pastimes. We're producing a little book. Last year we produced a book on Krishna Smarana, which we have published. I don't have any copy with me to show you, sorry. All right, so if you'll indulge me, I will read this. It's just a few minutes, and yes, you can let me know. You can say, that's terrible, or anyway, we'll see how it goes. The situation I'm picturing is many years after this episode, and we are first hearing from one elderly lady who has a granddaughter, and she says, or she writes a note to her granddaughter. This, by the way, is called a cooking pot of memories. My dearest Janaki, as the eldest of all my granddaughters, I hereby bestow upon you this heirloom, or heirloom, the cooking pot of your ancestor, Ramdas. As our family has been blessed by it through generations, may it continue to bestow its mysterious riches to you, your family, and further generations. Thus began the note to me written by my grandmother when I must have been about 6, not long before she died. At the time, I had no appreciation of her gift. It would not be until years later that the wonder of this rather ordinary appearing, yet obviously very old iron cooking pot would dawn upon me. As I pass this same heirloom on to you, you'll likely have the same reaction as I had when I was your age, a mixture of curiosity, indifference, and dismissal of your grandmother's sentimentality. Still, dear child, let me relate to you what I know from the talk that has circulated in our family in the hope that you will draw inspiration from it one day. It seems that your ancestors were Madurai Gurukal Brahmins who were connected to the Meenakshi temple, worshipping Shiva and Parvati and augmenting their income as teachers of the old books. Ram Dass was one of them who came to be known as such or came to call himself such. No one is quite sure. What happened, they say, is that Ram Dass's younger sister died rather suddenly when he was in his early 20s. He was already married by then and had a son. But when his sister died, he suddenly became strange, so they say. He became withdrawn and would spend most of his time reading the Valmiki Ramayana and the Tamil Kamban Ramayana. All this was more or less tolerated by family and neighbors, but of course people talk. And they started to say that Ram Dass had become possessed. Why else would he spend hours by himself muttering and chanting, Rama, Sita Rama, and sometimes call out loudly, Sita? So the plan started to crystallize to bring him to a local exorcist, which apparently they did, to no effect. But that's another story. This is where the history gets jumbled. Some say that it was a wandering sannyasi whom they identify as the saint from Bengal, Sri Chaitanya, who helped him out of his distracted melancholy. Others say that whoever it was who visited him only made things worse for our Ram Dass. In any case, this is where the cooking pot comes into the picture. Some villagers apparently said that your ancestor, in all his distraction, came to see himself as Lakshman, Lord Rama's younger brother and constant companion during their banishment in the forest. Others say no, that he saw himself merely as an assistant to Lakshman, which is also what the Bengalis say. In any case, it seems he liked to cook. Spending hours in the nearby forest gathering wild-growing herbs and vegetables, they say he came to know more about local herbs, fruits, and vegetables than all the village women. And then he would prepare what he had gathered and cook it up in this very pot, offering it to a sort of deity of Ram he had fashioned out of wood. Well, you may wonder why he didn't also fashion a deity of Sita, but you see, it seems this was the whole problem. From reading the Ramayana, Ram Dass had become even more troubled than he had been after the death of his sister, for in those books, he of course read about the abduction of Sita. All this inner torment he kept to himself, withdrawn as he was. But he did have one sort of companion whom people also said was rather strange, a fellow who was said to be what they used to call a half-breed, the son of a Brahmin from another village, we are assured, and a tribal woman. No one of our clan except Ram Dass would have anything to do with him. But Ram Dass kept his company, and they say it is only because of this half-breed outcast that we know any of these details today. Well, as we heard it, and this is a bit different from how the account is recorded by followers of Chaitanya, When this sannyasi came through on his way south, he met Ram Dass in the forest, and the latter invited him for lunch. At this point, as we heard it, Chaitanya recognized Ram Dass as Lakshman, or more likely simply as Lakshman and Rama's bhakta, for they say Chaitanya was himself an avatar of Rama, or something like that. The next thing you know, it must have been after the lunch, which apparently was delayed by Ram Dass's distracted state, they were together cooking up plans to go find Sita, for which they should leave immediately to find the kingdom of Kishkindha to get help from its army of monkeys. Maybe it was from the outcast that this plan leaked out, but in any case, it was then that the village elders stepped in, somehow preventing your ancestor from wandering off with that sannyasi. And they say eventually the sannyasi, said to be Sri Chaitanya, became himself again, coming to more or less normal consciousness. More or less. But he wasn't satisfied to leave Ram Dass in his troubled condition. Ram Dass was so troubled, they say, that he was threatening suicide. Being unable to bear the thought that Sita, the Divine Mother, had been abducted by the demon Ravana. The sannyasi noticed that although he had cooked for him, Ram Dass was fasting. Some suspected that it was the influence of Jain monks who settled in the area, from whom Ram Dass got the idea to fast to death, as they sometimes apparently do, which confuses me, because I didn't think they worship Ram and Sita. In any case, the sannyasi blessed us all by assuring him that the Sita abducted by Ravana was actually Maya Sita, a false form of the Divine Mother, and therefore there was no need for him to lament, as the demon had not and could not touch, indeed could not even see, the real Sita. They say that upon hearing this, your ancestor went back to a more normal state again, and that then everyone began to accept him as a devotee of Rama, even addressing him as Ram Dass. Some neighbors would even bring him vegetables to cook in this pot, to cook and offer to his Rama Murti, and they would quite eagerly accept the Rama Prasad that had thus been cooked in this pot, saying it had special curing powers. Some say that the Ram Bhaktas of Madurai descend from those who were eating from Ram Dass's cooking pot, this very pot I received from my grandmother, and which I'm passing on to you now. Well, the Bengalis say that Sri Chaitanya came through the village again a few weeks later, this time bearing a page from an old manuscript, the Kurma Purana, or some such old book, in which is written a confirmation about Maya Sita. Showing this to his friend Ram Dass, Ram Dass became overjoyed, and together they danced and sang Jai Sitaram late into the night, sometimes laughing with abandon and even rolling on the ground. And now, as I expect you will also find, whenever you have a festival on the appearance day of Lord Rama, if you place this cooking pot in a prominent place and decorate it — my grandmother said best not to cook with it anymore, as it is so old it might crack from the application of heat — and hold Rama Kirtan, all good fortune will be yours for the coming year. And that's the end. Hare Krishna. Anyway, Ram Dass was an Ekantika Bhakta, and I felt we could remember him and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, perhaps, with the help of some how to say, some additional, dare I say, imagination. The place of imagination in spiritual life, I think, is an interesting topic for exploration another time. But getting back to our reading, I would say it is required in spiritual life because we hear that there is willing, there is knowledge, and there is activity out of which the world is manifest, and all of us as servants of the Lord participate in these willing, knowing, and acting. So willing certainly involves imagination. And out of this imagining, then we can create a very nice situation for serving the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. Does anyone have a question, comment, or complaint? Correction. Glory to you. You're a guest, so we'll allow it.
First one, you mentioned that the explanations that you've been giving about the diversity and expansion of divinity were something from Pancharatra. Did Krishna Das Kaviraj lift that from Pancharatra when he offered the Kriya Kriya Kriya, or does he contribute to something unique and not from anywhere else?
He refers to other texts, and the suspicion of the scholars is that the lifting that he might be doing is from the Goswamis, who we understand heard from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but indeed we have the Brihad Bhagavatamrita Rupa Goswami. It's a little, one wonders, because this is within the teachings to Sanatana Goswami, but the details that we read here in the Goswami literature is not from Sanatana, it's from Rupa Goswami. But then you may say, what's the problem? One day Rupa and Sanatana sat down after Lord Chaitanya spoke to Sanatana, and then Sanatana conveyed that information to Rupa Goswami. That's one possibility. Scholars, since it's their profession to be suspicious, they say, could have been the other way around, that Krishnadas, who was coming after the Goswamis, was learning from Rupa Goswami, may have used his book. Why not a combination of both? Rupa Goswami and Raghunath, whom Krishnadas credits with his knowledge, from which he then writes, could have said, look, it's all here in this book which I wrote. That's what Lord Chaitanya taught me. Or that's what he taught my big brother, Sanatana Goswami. But as I remember, there are some references to other texts within this text. Now, your question was, is there something new, something original? I think the key original point is Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. It's Krishna who's behind all this. Because Pancharatra starts out with Narayana. And Lord Chaitanya is saying, yes, but you missed a point, and you missed a crucial point. Yeah. And your
explanatory means to end, the what you say, is it an explanatory means to an end, or is it an unworkable end?
You've been going to school too long. What? Reading my book. Listen to him. Or is it an ontological reality? If we read with faith, we can understand that if the Lord is all-powerful, and I think that's our philosophical starting point, then why can he, what would be the problem for him to expand himself in indeed unlimited forms? And unlimited is a big word, which means why would not amongst those unlimited forms be all the forms which are mentioned, are listed? And furthermore, since we have an acharya, in this case I'm speaking of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is himself, with faith, we read descriptions of him one day becoming inspired, ecstatic, and feeling suddenly the mood of the Varaha avatar climbing on the shoulders of Murari Gupta, who is our first source of information about the life of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In other words, why would Murari Gupta make that up, that that Lord Chaitanya one day climbed on his shoulders and rode around with him calling Varaha, Varaha, unless it happened? And why would it happen unless the Lord had some actual experience of being that Lord? That's a question which one can ask. Why they may, someone may say why, and we may say why not? Why is it not possible for the Lord to appear and to do all these wonderful things? Anyway, many things might be said, but that would be a start. That the Lord is all-powerful. If he's all-powerful, we understand he therefore can expand into unlimited forms. Why would he do that? For a very definite reason, in order to make himself accessible to conditioned souls. And why would he do that? Because the Lord is not only powerful, he's also compassionate. Another axiomatic claim. For a theist, the Lord is usually, for most theists, the Lord is all-powerful and he is all-merciful. But... Okay. Yes. Okay. On that note, yes. Yes, indeed. Ah, indeed. Why does he do that? Well, it's explained in various sources, including Bhagavatam, that the Lord, whatever he does as lila. And lila means without some ulterior purpose. And it suggests... often the word lila is translated as sport. We see that young boys, in particular, men also, they like to fight. Girls less so, although, I don't know. They have a different style. That's another topic. But boys like to fight. And so there is wrestling, and there is boxing, and there's wars. People like to fight, so they kill each other. Where does that propensity come from? We understand all propensities find their origin in the Supreme Person. We are all parts and parcels, so the Lord has a propensity to fight. And so he makes arrangements to fight with certain beings whom indeed he creates himself, and we might say he creates them for that purpose. I'm going to create a demon who's going to be so troublesome that he needs to be killed. And this is going to be so much fun. And so it becomes an opportunity for the Lord to sport in this way. And of course, we understand the being who is thus killed is actually most fortunate. Having been killed directly by the Lord means that person becomes liberated. It's not, death is not by any means an end. It is simply a transition. So it's all in good fun. Persuade him, yeah. Yeah. Okay, that's another kind of, okay, that's a good point. The Lord does that in his form as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's our understanding. At one point, he almost wanted to kill one demon, Madai. But he was begged, please don't do it, and then he stopped, and then indeed this is what happened. The person's heart was changed. But I wouldn't say your point is misdirected. I would say though that when it comes to what the Lord does, we tend to feel like, well, you know, what does it mean for us to argue with how the Lord acts? If the Lord wants to act in this way, we simply appreciate that as wonderful and amazing. And then we look for other ways that the Lord acts, because the Lord's pastimes are unlimited, and so there are pastimes where the Lord will act in some way, as you describe. Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, in a certain sense. But that's another subject. That's another story. Thank you, Prabhu. Yes. Oh, very good, very good. The Lord is keeping himself fit. Thank you. That's, yes, the Lord needs some exercise. Good exercise. So I'd just like to say once more that if anyone felt a twinge of inspiration, wants to reflect on writing something, what we're trying to do is reflect on the Lord's pastimes from a perspective which is not given explicitly in our Shastra, but which is not rasa basa. We want to keep it, you know, so that it is in line with Siddhanta, if you like. But we're taking contributions, written contributions. They can be very short. They can be a bit longer, not too long. This is devotional service, Prabhu. But if someone wants to sponsor someone who wants to write if they're paid per word, we'll discuss. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki.